guys, welcome back to Daily Devo with Sarah. It's your host, Sarah, and I thank you for tuning in. So it's Sunday, January 22nd, so happy Sunday to you. And oh my gosh, it's January 22nd, which is unbelievable because I can't with time anymore. You know, the next thing we're going to be saying is February 2023, and how insane is that? All right, anyway, I want to ask you guys, what do you guys do on Sundays? Because I think Sunday is one of the days out of the 7 days that we have in a week where it looks really different for everybody. And technically, that's true for any day, any given day. We don't have identical lives. But then, at least for the most part, who are working professionals, Monday through Friday are when we wake up early to get to work for our shifts. And then we come home around what? Like late afternoon or early evening. And then we may hit up the gym. We may run a few errands. But then our nighttime, you know, routine look pretty much the same too, where we eat, we wash up, we might, you know, scroll on our phones a little bit, maybe read a book in the week, sleep, because, you know, we only have so many hours in a day. So I feel like Saturday being pretty packed with events too, Sunday is that one day in the week where we have all these hours and we get to structure how we want to spend that time. And it's usually a little bit less agenda-y compared to the other 6 days. And I feel like the way you spend that such a big chunk of free time tells something about you and your values. And it doesn't have to be so stretched out like that, but I did want to put that out as a thought. At least for me, when I wake up on Sundays, I like to take myself on a 2-hour walk. Yes, 2 hours. It's so different. The quality of like a 1-hour walk and then 2-hour walk. It's not like 2 hours, that magical chunk of time, because I kind of made it up too. But then, you know, sometimes even when you walk outside, you have to get yourself mentally settled. Like I'll be so distracted by my, you know, surrounding when I'm on my street, like, oh my gosh, those two squirrels are fighting, or like, oh, that house is nice, or like, I love this neighborhood, or like, oh, they should cut that tree down. Like, I'll have all these thoughts. But then after about like 40 minutes, which is such a long time, I'll actually start to like listen to the content of whatever podcast I have on or music I have on. And then, you know, get these like revelations and epiphanies popping in my head. And sometimes I even like to go on my Sunday morning walks in complete silence. And that might sound totally painful at first, and you do have to take some time to discipline yourself to do that, but you know, it comes with practice. And those are glorious moments that I just recommend for everybody, because for me, at the end of my 2-hour walks, especially when it's in silence, I feel like I had a whole therapy session by myself. And so many things are brought to clarity. So many things, you know, I get to process my feelings and thoughts in a completely different way than I were to just like journal them out. So give it a try. I love doing that and starting off my morning like that. And then I like to, I guess I like to also, but I go to church, have a service there, and then I come back. And this is my favorite part of Sunday, where I have a completely agenda-free Sunday afternoon and evening. I don't have this on Monday through Saturday, because at least Monday through Friday, I'm expected to be at work, right? Because I'm hired for a certain position. They tell me what time I gotta show up and until what time I have to stay. And a good chunk of my day is dictated for me in advance, right? And then on Saturdays, when you have to show up to like your friend's party, or like a date with somebody, or like, you know, run errands, you're expected to be at somewhere at a specific time when you got to go to appointments and yada, 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 right? So your brain, your body, and your soul are told where to be and what time, what day for those 6 days. But then on Sunday, I'll flip that around, where I'll let my body, brain, and heart like talk to me, my soul talk to me. What do you guys need? You tell me what to do this time around. You tell me what you need, because I've been bossing you around all week. So let me give you the microphone and have you dictate some stuff too, right? And so literally, I'll sit on my sofa just in complete silence. I'm not doing anything. I'm not scrolling on my phone. And then wherever I'm feeling tension in my body, I'll stretch it. You know, I'll put on a 20-minute backstretch video on YouTube and I'll do that. Because when I'm in a hurry, when I'm like constantly hustling, I don't even know where I feel tension. I'm like, I guess I'm a little tight on my neck, but then I won't go out of my way to like stretch it and, you know, like release it. But then, you know, on a day like Sunday, I'll let my body tell me like, where are you tight and how can I help you? And then I'll do actually go through with a stretch, throw in a breathing exercise, whatever. And then when I feel like my brain is telling me I need some sort of mental stimulation, but then I want to be entertained at the same time, I'll put on Netflix. I'll play that documentary that I've been wanting to watch for several months and just never got a chance to, right? And then like in another context, if yes, it still wants mental stimulation, but it wants to be a little bit more actively engaged, then rather than passively watching something on the TV, I'll pick up that book that I started and never finished. And I will feel so wholly nourished when I let my body tell me what I need. And it's a completely different feeling from, you know, your boss and your friends and your family like asking you to be at a certain place and spend a certain amount of time and letting them like dictate your life, you know? I mean, that sounds a little bit dramatic, but you get the point, you know what I mean? So like, if you guys don't have any agenda-free days, definitely give that gift to yourself. I highly recommend it because it has significantly improved the quality of my life, and it's so simple, you know? It's just a matter of like honoring what you need rather than just going along with the regular routine rhythm of your life, you know? I mean, we do need structure in our lives, of course, but can we make room for some unstructured too, right? That's my point. Anyway, that was my tangent of the day. We are looking at the topic of idolatry in the context of wisdom today. I see that the title is Identify Your Idols. And idols are what we all have. And I feel like when I talk about idolatry, this is going to be a very new concept for my non-Christian listeners. But for us Christian listeners, we are probably more than familiar with this concept. Because when is idolatry not talked about in sermons and stuff, you know? I mean, it's a very ubiquitous sin out of so many other sins that exist in the world. And especially because I feel like we're in this, you know, highly developed capitalistic country, idolatry is very much of an American sin too, you know, not that it's exclusive. Anyway, let's get into it. The Bible verse that we're starting off of is Proverbs chapter 3 verses 5, which is, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. So this is such a throwback. I heard this verse all the time growing up. Every Sunday there would be like a song for the kids to dance to at church, and this would be like the verse we have to memorize during VBS, we know, which stands for Vacation Bible School. And they just have like a whole bunch of programs at church for kids to attend. You know, like I've engaged with this verse since I was like at a single digit age. And I would say when I started to get more intentional with the Bible, this verse took on a whole nother meaning in terms of how it was relevant to my life. And I guess just to speak from my own journey with this verse, it has been very back and forth in terms of me feeling comforted and encouraged by this verse and feeling challenged and anxious by this verse. And it all has to do with the first portion of the verse, which is, trust in the Lord with all your heart. The two words that are triggering for me in a good and a bad way are trust and all. Number one, I have a trust issue with that word trust, because I feel like with all of the negative experiences that I went through in the past where I gave my trust to people, but then that trust was broken, I get scared around this concept and this practice of trust. And also, all, like trust in the Lord with all your heart, I feel like I've never truly done that before. I was close, but if anything, I feel like I had moments where I trusted the Lord with like 90% of my heart, and then the other 10% just like couldn't be part of it because I was doubtful that like giving all my trust to God was the right thing to do, you know, because it's emotionally, I guess, risky to give 100% of your trust to God. I mean, let alone anyone. Like, I don't know. Like, do you guys have somebody in your life that you trust 100%? If you are married, like, do you trust your partner 100%? Like, is that what happens in marriages? Because I have not experienced it in order for me to know. But even when you're like seriously dating, I don't know. I feel like when I start dating again, like, and whenever I get to this point of like marriage or whatever, like, if I could 100% trust my partner, and not because I feel doubtful in advance about that person, but because that person is a human and not a God. So, you know, like, humans are broken, humans aren't perfect, so they're untrustworthy. How do you even trust anything or anyone with all your heart? That concept itself is mind-boggling to me. But yeah, that's why like my trouble with this verse is like the first thing I think of. And I would love to know like what your thoughts are on this verse. If you have grown up with it like I have, has this troubled you or has this brought you comfort? Like, it comforts me and encourages me because it lets me know that like I have somebody who I can rely on and depend on without worrying and without, you know, having to take care of everything on my own. But then, like I said before, it's challenging because trusting is a risky thing because you're giving your, such a big, deep emotional part of yourself away to somebody else. And when that gets transferred and that trust isn't handled the way that you expect, then that's going to leave a big scar and of disappointment. And that's what I've experienced with human beings. So, you know, is it going to be any different with God? Like, of course, yes. But am I still nervous about trusting someone with all my heart? Yeah, like, absolutely. So that's at least where I'm coming from with this verse. So yeah, if you guys want to pause right now and just reflect for 20 seconds on what your stance is when it comes to trust, I think that would be helpful in terms of just being introspective moving forward. So let's get into the author's input. Proverbs chapter 3 lists 6 things that can serve as the marks of a wise person and at the same time are the means for growing in wisdom. The first is trust in the Lord. You can believe in God, yet still trust something else for your real significance and happiness, which is therefore your real God. So I think all of us can definitely come up with an example for what is our real God, right? If truly God is your actual God, then I'm very jealous of you. That's amazing. And I want to get there someday. But a lot of us, I think, say with our mouths that we acknowledge God as our Savior and that we love Him. But then does our amount of trust we give Him equate to what we profess with our mouth? I feel like there's a bit of an incongruence there, and I guess a sort of inconsistency. And I say that at least for myself. I say that I believe in God, but my belief in Him, and yeah, my belief that He exists and that He's real and that He loves me, do not necessarily get translated to the amount of trust I give Him. And I don't like to unnecessarily quantify things because it's not about numbers, but sometimes I think quantifying certain things gives you even an estimation and a unique sense of outlook. So I guess I'm making up my own question for myself and you guys. Like, if you had to quantify in percentage how much you trust God to have the best intentions for you and to take care of you and for Him to be like, you know, foolproof insurance for your life, what would that number be? I'm ashamed that it's not high for me. I guess it's as low as 20%, and that's me being generous with myself. And I am just convicted right now and thinking, okay, like, how can this get bigger, you know? Because this verse is saying 100% of the trust is what is being required of me. Well, not required, but is being prompted from me. And I don't even know what that would feel like or look like. So I guess it's good that we're exploring this to help us get there a little bit closer. We hide how we do this from ourselves, and it is only when something goes wrong with, say, your career or your family, that you realize is so much more important than the Lord himself. What does this have to do with wisdom? Everything. There are excessive emotions surrounding the things you make the functional trust of your heart, whether it's your career, wealth, spouse, children, or some romantic relationship. You will be inordinately shaken, anxious, angry, or despondent if anything threatens them. They cloud your judgment, distort your vision of yourself and the world. Idolatries of the heart lead to foolishness in life, and the ultimate remedy for idolatry is the gospel. We won't need to justify ourselves by works, by success or romance or achievement if we freely are justified by faith in Jesus, as said in Romans 3:21-24. I think that whole paragraph that we just read open us up to the revelation that the things that we are concerned with in our lives that are also our idols are very emotion-ridden, if that makes sense. So think about your career. There's a lot of emotions and your thoughts surrounding it, as it should. I mean, it's a big part of your life, but then when so much time and attention goes to it, then how much time and energy and emotion do you actually have left to expend on God? And same thing with anything else besides career. It's not like relationships are bad. It's not like other things in our lives are bad. You know, God put us on this earth to like enjoy and to, you know, of course, commune with him and spend time with him. But also, like, he created this world and he what? Told us to enjoy it, right? In Genesis, until we like messed it up. And it is when we become so obsessively obsessed with the things of this world, we lose focus on what is the purpose of this all, like the purpose of our lives and our existence on earth, which is God. And like the verses, I mean, the input says here, they cloud our judgment and distort the vision of ourselves. And I feel like that makes sense, because the further we get away from God by spending our time and energy on the idols in our lives, we are opening ourselves up more to being exposed to opportunities of not prioritizing God. What is the best candidate in your life for an alternate quote-unquote God? Let's take some time to answer that for ourselves. I mean, there are so many, so I don't even know which one to go off of. But I guess one thing would be my like desire and obsession for a soulmate for myself. And this soulmate does not have to be a romantic partner. But if that is the case, then that would be nice and convenient, two in one, like a person where you can have as a partner and a soulmate. But a soulmate in the sense of a friend or a family member or a romantic partner who I can share the deepest of my values and beliefs with, someone who accepts me exactly the way that I am, and someone who loves me as much as I love them, and our relationship is reciprocal and mutual and healthy. I feel like I don't have that in my life, and I've always wanted it. I think the last time I had a person like that in my life was in elementary school when I had a best friend, and I feel like even though we did not share our faith values, I feel like that relationship was the closest thing I had to a soulmate, because even though that friendship did not last or did not even end well, I never felt like I had someone who understood my heart so well. And mind you, this was elementary school. I was in fifth grade. But then even at that age, as a child, I knew what it was like to have somebody just get you without you having to explain yourself so much. And truly, it has been a long time ever since I felt like there was a friend who I met where our interests and, yeah, I guess liking for each other was just on such a same, that phrase doesn't make sense, like the same frequency and energy. I always feel like ever since that friendship, when I made new friends, I either liked them more than they liked me, and they liked me more than I liked them. I never felt like, you know, ever since that relationship, there was like a match, a good match. And, you know, I don't know if that's so important to you guys, but it was for me, because it made the relationship feel stable and that this was like a two-way relationship. And that's a concept and an idea and a reality that I am, you know what, now that I think out loud, like very obsessed with and desire. And I'll have moments just when I'm like, say, driving, you know, to work, or like I'm reading a book and then I have that like silent moment for like a few seconds and a thought pops up in my mind. You know what thought comes up? This one, where like, oh, like I really wish I had a soulmate, you know, someone I could spill my heart to and just be understood without over-explaining, without having to fear that I'm going to be misinterpreted and therefore offend or misrepresent myself, and someone who likes me as much as I like them. Like, if you guys have even just one person like that in your life, please know that it's a blessing. And like, it's not even a husband that I want, even though I do. Like, it's a soulmate that I'm seeking, that kind of a relationship. And so, really, really happy for you if you guys have something like that or someone like that. But that, I guess, would say is my best candidate in my life as an alternate God. It's this concept of this human that I don't have but want so bad. And I know that God can meet that need for me, but then it doesn't satisfy me the same way, because he's not a human and he's not visible and he's not like someone I can go into a dialogue with. Have you guys ever gone on a dialogue with God? Because I don't know what that feels like, but I'm very much of a conversationalist and I like to go back and forth, and I just cannot do that with God. And so I feel like I kind of separate my relationship with God from my relationship with other humans. Like, I do not put them in the same category. But yeah, that answers the question for me, and I would love to know, like, what is yours? So the prayer for today is, Lord, when the Israelites prayed to you for help, you did not respond. But when they put away their idols, you began work in their lives. I too have run to you with my request without the willingness to root out my deep false gods. O Lord, help me find my all in thee, which is quoted from probably another verse in the Bible, and in nothing else. Amen. So obviously, these are written out prayers that are recommended, but we don't have to pray them, you know? We just have that prayer as a guide, as a starting point for our own prayer that we can customize based on where we are in our faith and based on where how our heart is responding to what we just read, the verse and the input. I would say for me, this is not the kind of prayer that resonates with me, because I'm still wrestling with trusting God and putting away my idols. I feel like doing that equates to foregoing and letting go of my standards in life when I seek after a better career, when I seek after a better relationship, when I seek after better quality of life as a whole. But when I become so obsessive with that over God and thinking about Him, it feels like a sin. And so, yeah, it's very messy for me. I know this could be so straightforward, but my brain just not does not want to process it that way. Yeah, not gonna lie, out of all the sins that God mentions in the Bible, putting away my idol is my biggest battle in my faith. And I don't even know if I want to do this, put away my idols. So I need God's divine intervention here to make the idols in my life undesirable, because I'm looking at them and I'm like, yeah, I like them. Thank you, God, for putting them in my life. And I want to keep exploring them, and I want to keep investing my emotions and time and energy into them. And so my prayer is for God to, like, not necessarily take these things away, but make them undesirable in my eyes when it comes to how much I value them over Him. It's just hard, and I know you guys can relate, because when you obsess over certain idols in your life, you feel like you actually reap some benefits in the process. Like, I remember in eighth grade, I was, like, overweight. I did not look pretty at all by typical girl standards. You know, I had so much acne on my face. My hair was, like, oily all the time. And it's not because I didn't shower, people. It's just because of hormones just racking up my body. Like, my hair was just oily all the time. And I just did not look good. You know what I mean? And when I kind of entered anorexia, like, the year after, and started dropping, I mean, I dropped 20 pounds from where I was, same height, when I was anorexic. And when that happened and I lost weight, like, I felt people treating me better and giving me more attention. Guys being more flirty with me, my acquaintances and friends, quote unquote friends, at school being friendlier with me, like talking more to me than before. And so it was almost like a reward, and like, oh, like if you put effort, that was my lesson. If you put effort into how you look, then people reward you with attention and friendships. And you think, I don't think that way now. Like, as much as I hate that that is the case in my life, I learned the lesson. And that is the truth. I mean, there are people out there who are totally immune to your look having any factor in how they treat you and, you know, place value on you. But that is not majority of the people. Or, you know what, maybe I'm just meeting all the wrong superficial people. But I mean, I feel like naturally as humans, that is true. Like, even me, I'll find myself assigning, like, bigger amount of value to prettier people, or like richer people, or like more vibrant people. And so, you know, like, for me to not be affected by the rewards that come with obsessing over these shallow things in life, this is what makes it hard, you guys. Even with success, aren't you more drawn to successful people? Don't you feel like you have a little bit more clout compared to other people when you make more money, or when you're at a certain position, when you work for a certain company or an organization over certain other ones in social settings, right? And those are the rewards that keep you in the sin of idolatry. Not that pursuing success, not that pursuing taking care of your body and your physical appearance is bad, but it is so easy to get into this mental habit of prioritizing those things over God. And that, I think, looks different for everybody, but pretty much the same when it comes to where your heart is and how you make decisions in your life and what you choose to sacrifice in that stage. So I want to put my own spin on prayer. Feel free to pray with me. God, thank you for the Bible verse, Proverbs 1:3-5. This has been part of my life for more than a decade. And as I grow deeper in my faith with you, I want this to become truth in my life, where I trust you with all my heart and lean not on my own understanding. You know, it's such a gem of a verse, and I want this verse to free me and to give me peace. But as you know, God, I don't trust. Like, trust is not something that comes easy for me. It's not something that I'm necessarily excited to do. And I can't even remember the last time I fully trusted anything or anyone. But maybe that's the point. Like, I'm in a broken world with broken people. I'm never going to be able to find somebody I 100% trust, but you are that one being that I can. And maybe that is what you have meant to teach me all along. I don't know. I don't want to pretend to know what you think and how you plan my life, but all I do know is that I want to, deep inside my heart, live out Proverbs 3:5 and let that be my life. But it is, I humbly admit, difficult to do. So help me trust God, regardless of how much trust has broken me in the past. May I trust at least in you. I may have doubts about everything else and everyone else in life, but with you, allow me to have take enough risk, allow me to have enough courage to trust at least you, because technically that's the only place where I need to put my trust in anyway. So let me start with you, because God, you say you are reliable and dependable. And there definitely were moments in my life when I did not feel like that was true. But still, I want to experience what it's like to be able to depend and rely completely on you and absolutely nothing else. Help me in this process and help anyone else listening to this who may be in that process. And in Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Okay, we'll wrap it up here, and I will talk to you guys tomorrow. Bye.